Welcome everyone to this, what is the first of this term's series of graduate seminars after a pretty successful program last time. I'm really happy to be able to, or just perhaps a brief word about how the format works. I know many of you, or some of you actually, there are some new faces here. So just briefly, it's two papers, there's two presenters, a paper of approximately 20 minutes, followed by about 10 minutes of questions, and then we go on to the second one. So, very happy to introduce Karkin Chuk. Chuk, yeah, who's currently, as you said, in the fourth year of his his DPhil in anthropology, and he's going to be presenting on strangers in the temple. And well, you can read it for yourself. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for the very brief introductions. Yeah. So, I'm going to talk about my DPhil research about the Indian traders in China. But because most of the Indians in China are followers of Guru Nanak, which is so-called the Nanak Party, including Sindhis and Sikhs. So that's why you can see on my title that I see it as an ethnographic studies of the Nanak Party traders in the Chinese textile cities. Even though I'm not a scholar in religious studies, but when I was on the field in China, engaging with the Indians, I found that there were quite a lot of Indian religious practice, no matter on the household level or on a more communal level. So I collect quite a lot of data about their religious practice, and since I'm not good enough or knowledgeable enough to interpret the religious meaning of those kind of practice. So I instead use a social angle, or what anthropologists always put as a social and cultural perspective, to see through what kind of meanings and what kind of impact of those religious practice on the social network formation among those Indians in China. And I have a very catchy title, which I term as Stranger in the City, or Strangers in the Temple. Because when I was doing my fieldwork among those Indians in China, I found that it is really difficult for them to make friends with each other. For example, when you go into the Sikh temple in China, as a new migrant, for example, it is quite usual that you want to make some new friends because you are newcomers, and I know nothing about China. So I think it makes some sense if you have a very strong feeling that I should make some friends or new friends, through my temple participations. But when I was in China, I found those Indians, they just don't feel like to make friends with each other, even though they may need those kind of, local information or local networks for them to make better adaptations, when they are living in China for such a long while. So I found that there are a lot of strangers in the temple, even though you find maybe 100 or 1,000 people, taking part in the religious rituals. I call it as a politics of friendship because it seems like they have some reasons to consider and to consider before they want to make Indian friends with each other. In that sense, that I wanted to show the politics of friendship through some case study on different levels of religious practice, as you can see on the screen, which is number one, household and workplace religious practice, which is more interpersonal and private, and B, any religious festival like Diwali and Chhati Chand, and C, communal religious congregation like what I saw in the Sikh temple. Research methodologies. Basically, I am a graduate student in social anthropology, so I employed ethnographic methods, to collect my data. I did multi-sided fieldwork. Part of it was done in India, Delhi and Mumbai in particular. But I spent most of my time in China in a place called Shaoxing. My China side of fieldwork lasted for more than a year. Let me just briefly introduce where is Shaoxing and what Shaoxing is. Shaoxing basically is the biggest textile center in China because, as you can see from the screen, over 30% of China make fabrics are traded and dyed through Shaoxing. And there were quite a big number of clothes fabrics and other kinds of household textile items are manufactured, assembled, and printed and dyed in Shaoxing. So, Shaoxing basically is a town for textile and nothing more, on the one hand. And on the other hand, most of the people in Shaoxing are workers, are businessmen, and for the textile industry. So, for those of you who don't know the map of China very well, I show you the position of Shaoxing. As I said, like, because I mean the textile economy in Shaoxing is really, really substantial. So I mean it draw quite a large number of foreigners. I mean including Indians to go to China to set up some middleman trading business for them to seek fortune in that emerging Chinese textile economy. As you can see from this photo, Punjabi Sikh was inspecting the fabrics, I mean manufacture process in China. Yeah, I mean, far right corner, there's a guy wearing blue turban. Yeah, even though, whatever, like, you can see some Indian face and Chinese face there. That's fine. Can't get it. Yeah, I mean, I don't have a pointer, but... treasure hunt. So, whatever, like... So, Indians in China. There are like more than 10,000 Indians officially registered with the local Chinese government. But when you comparing this number with the total Chinese populations in Shaoxing, it seems like a very small number. But actually, there are also many irregular migrants in which those Indians just go to Shaoxing on tourist visa. Or they just registered their visa in other cities of China. So that 10,000 Indians, this number is, I mean, definitely underestimated. And, I mean, maybe I'll just say a little bit more about those Indians in terms of their migration profile. Before those Indians came to China, they were in Dubai, they were in South Korea. Actually, very few of them were direct migrants or direct entrepreneurs from India. So that means that those Indians had multiple migration and business profile before they came to China. And those people started to come to China since the late 1990s, during which the textile economy started to boom in China. And as I said, I mean, those Indians in Shaoxing, I mean, nearly all of them are the followers of Guru Nanak. So I term them as Nanak Party here. And what they do in China for those Indians, basically, they are all middleman traders, in which they are not the final buyers, nor they are the local suppliers. They are some people in between, which is called, in sociology, we call them middleman traders. So those people, they are not the producer or the buyers, but they are the people who are trying to connect both sides of the parties and earning commissions in between. And the commission rate can range from 5 to 30%, which is quite... high for them, which is quite enough for them to have a good life in China or elsewhere if they can make some good business from China. There's one, I just call one scholar description on the Sindhis religion, because as I said, like most of the Indians in China, in Shaoxing, are Sindhis. Or quote unquote, Sindhis religion is like Hindus. They believe in Guru Granth Sahib, the holy book of Sikhism, like Sikhs. They dress like Christians, and their language is the Muslim, Islam Muslim. So you can see it's very hybridized for the Sindhi's religious profile. But actually, when you look into how those people practice their religion on the ground, it is even more complicated, as I will show in the following slides. They even combine the Chinese calligraphies and the Chinese lucky sayings into their religious practice alongside them. A mantra they adore on the door. Then I will now talk about a little bit on the household religious practice. As I said, like those people are the followers of the group of the Sikhism or other kinds of Hindu religion and so on. But when you look into their local religious practice, they are quite individually growth oriented, which means they do some religious worship basically for their family and for their business individual interests rather than for some kind of like spiritual or larger contextual pursuit. So in that sense, it's really highly individualized. I mean, you can see all these kinds of Hindu, auspicious sites, I mean, in those Indian offices and their home stores and the place they will stay and work. And they put quite a lot of emphasis on those kind of individual religious practice. But when we move on to look into their communal religious festival, it tells quite a different story. Here I will talk about two festivals. The first one is Diwali and the second one is the Chati Chand, to illustrate my points. Diwali is, I mean, as you can imagine, that Indians everywhere, no matter they're in Hong Kong, no matter they're in UK, no matter they're in India, it's quite a big thing for them. I mean, they will do a lot of rituals, they will do a lot of family gatherings just for the celebration of this, I mean once a year festival. But in China, because the Indians there, as I said, they are all in one business, so they are quite suspicious with each other because they are competing for the same market niche textile. In that sense, it is quite difficult to organize themselves into making some larger scale communal religious festival or gatherings or celebrations. So, as a result, most of the celebrations that you can find in Shaoxing about Diwali were the shortened or the simplified version. When you compare the Diwali celebration, you can find in UK, India, or Hong Kong. And I visited quite a few celebrations of Diwali in Shaoxing. I found out that they were quite entertainment-oriented, in which you can only find Diwali ball, dancing party, firework, those kind of things, instead of like religious book reading or some kind of religious rituals in the public area and so on. And when I interviewed those Indians in Shaoxing, I mean, about how they felt about Diwali, most of them said it is a good break. Even though, I mean, Diwali in the Chinese Canada, I mean, the days of Diwali is not a public holiday. So, I mean, this word, a good break, I mean, to me, it seems like to signify a psychological or individual sense of break instead of the vocation break on the one hand. And on the other hand, it is quite interesting to see Diwali just as a break and nothing more. As a holiday or as a holiday mood thing, but not something very religiously engaged. And then I will talk about the Chati Chand. Chati Chand is the most important annual religious festival for the Sindhis all around the world. When you look into the Chati Chand celebrations in Shaoxing, it is quite religiously charged as compared to Diwali, because only one big public communal religious celebration will be organized in Shaoxing. But I mean, no Diwali balls or Chati Chand balls will be organized instead. So Chati Chand in that sense is more religiously invested by the Indians in Shaoxing, Sindhis in particular. Maybe I call one informant saying to point out my argument here. Quote-unquote, what he does is for himself. Himself is the main organizer of the Chati Chand celebration in Shaoxing, not for the community. You Chinese say water is like money. We think the same. We are celebrating for the water god, Julela. Julela is the goddess that the Sindhis worship during the Chati Chand. So when I talked with the people there in the Chati Chand celebrations, even though you saw there were quite a lot of people there, more as I had counted them, there were more than 1,000 Sindhis there in the congregation hall for the celebration of Chati Chand. But when I talked with them one by one, it seems that they were quite jealous of the organizers. In terms of the organizer can be the first one who got the holy water from the temple people, and he could be the one who's standing on the central stage to lead the religious ritual and so on. Even though you saw them, they sit side by side quite harmoniously, but there were quite a lot of undercurrents. I mean, between each other when I asked them how they feel about Chatichan, which is quite interesting. And this kind of like antagonist, I mean, settlement, it was is even, I mean, more is even stronger when I look into the like the wiki and the like, I mean, the regular communal religious congregations like the Sunday congregation that I found in the Gurdwara, the Sikh temple in Shaoxing. Again, maybe I just call one Indian informant saying to say out this poem. Open call. I just come here for a spiritual reason. I just come to the Gurdwara for the spiritual reason. I need peace in my mind, and that's why I come to the temple. This is a good place, but I don't like to talk with the people there. I have got enough troubles of trusting people so much in the business. I don't need this anymore. So thank you. Please don't talk to me. This is quite typical reply when I tried to approach the Indians in the temple. Which is quite sad. So again, when you see all those people are sitting peacefully, I mean, side by side with each other, but once the grantee is the temple people, I mean, the people who conduct the religious ritual, the people who are in the temple conduct the religious ritual announce that today's ceremony is finished, everybody will just go on and don't talk with each other and say not even saying goodbye to each other, and they just go on. Which is quite bizarre when you go into the Gurdwara TF, for example, in Oxford, after the Sangha, I mean, the people will still, I mean, just say a few words to each other during the Langa sessions, and I mean, say how are you doing, or things like that, etc. But in Shaoxing, I hardly saw that kind of thing happening. So why? I will answer this question by saying some concurring remarks here. I argue that there are, as you can see, the disharmony, I mean, taking place in those kind of religious practice, I mean, on different levels. I argue that there are politics of Indian friendships, I mean, that you can see from these different kinds of religious practice. Maybe I say it one by one and on different levels. I mean, first of all, when you look into the household level, those religious practices like doing adi or getting puja is more like an individual pursuit. And when I, based on the interview with those Indians, I asked them why they did those, I mean, thing in their office at home. They said that it is good to get some protection from the God on the business and our family. So the community is not there when they are doing those kind of individual religious practice. And when you look into the annual religious festival like Diwali, you saw people enjoy the quite a lot in the Diwali dancing party, Diwali ball, or things like that. But when you compare Diwali with Chatichan, I mean, because in Chatichan people only went there for religious reason, but those people just didn't get along with each other well during the Chatichan. But they could get quite well with each other in the Diwali dancing party, which is quite strange to me. But when you think it from a sociological point of view, it seems like if the thing is like religiously charged, they want to be socially discharged. I mean, they want to religiously engage, but they don't want to make it a part of their social networks. It is even more obvious when you look into the case study of the Sikh temple in Shaoxing. Going back to this call, I mean, those Indians in Shaoxing, they went to the Gurdwara mostly for their own spiritual reason instead of making friends. So that's why I put the title of this presentation as Stranger in the Temple. Very small funding, but I hope that it will give you some interesting story about the Indian China. That's all of it. Thank you. Mm-hmm.